Coming up on Broadway Radios this week on Broadway, we talk about Murder Ballad, Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, the Broadway Beauty Pageant, and the National High School Musical Theater Awards, the Jimmys. We also chat about Macbeth and Peter and the Starcatcher's move to the New World Stages, so please stay tuned.
We're quiet listening from the Blue Ridge Mountains. We hear them sing someone's gonna die. Songs of saints and of sinners, they're but for the grace of God, though I.
Hello and welcome to Broadway Radios this week on Broadway for Sunday, May 26, 2013. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast this morning, we have Michael Portantier and Peter Felicia. Peter is a theater journalist and historian with a number of books to his credit, the latest being Strippers, Showgirls, and Sharks, which comes out in a mere 2 days on May 28th. His columns appear at MTI Critcherland and Masterworks Broadway, as well as many other places. Good morning, Peter.
Hi.
I hear that you had a great review in the Wall Street Journal for your latest book yesterday.
Well, certainly it's an approval. Ethan Wharton, whom I admire greatly, did review it and spoke favorably about it. So I'm very pleased by that.
Excellent. It's good to get off to a good start. So Michael Portantier is with us also. He is a theater reviewer and essayist whose work appears at Talk on Broadway, the Sondheim Review, and Broadway Stars. He's also a photographer whose work can be seen at followspotphoto.com, as well as many other places on the internet. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
So, we're going to start off with an off-Broadway new musical at the Union Square Theater called Murder Ballad. Tell us about that, Peter.
Sure. What's interesting is that this is a transfer from Manhattan Theater Club, where it had some nice success last year. But here it is at the Union Square Theater, which has really been a showcase place recently for off-the-wall type productions, not your conventional type of theater. Slava's Snow Show was there, which where you sat in the audience and they put all sorts of gunk all over you. Plays or events called Groovaloo, you know, Stuffed and Unstrung. All these appeared at this theater. Right there on Park Avenue South and 17th Street. So here we were with a more conventional show, we thought, as we walked in, because this was going to be a four-character musical about adultery. And yes, it is that. And it's very entertaining. However, what is unconventional here is the seating. Many people will actually sit on where the stage used to be. Tables are set up all around where chairs used to be, and there's even a bar, a working bar where you can get drinks, but also it turns out to be a place that the actors will walk on the bar and walk on the tables and around the tables and above you and below you and in the aisles and all that while they're telling this story that Julia Jordan, who wrote the book and lyrics, and Juliana Nash, who wrote the music and some of the lyrics, too, tell the story of a simple story. A young woman marries a schlubby guy. He's a nice guy. And then the real love of her life comes along. And what's going to happen now? Well, you can certainly guess to a certain degree, but not to a total degree. There is indeed a surprise ending that comes out of nowhere and surprised me, certainly. The music is a lot of up-tempo rock and suits the characters very, very well. So that part of it was enjoyable. So, yeah, it's a good show. I had a decent enough time, but I was reminded of Max Bialystock's famous statement about theater in the square where nobody had a good seat. And to a certain degree, that's true here. It is tennis matchy in the sense that your head will be going this way, that way, up, down, around, and about. But nevertheless, the work itself is good enough, and the people in it Well, I'm sorry that Karen Olivo has ostensibly at least left the business because she's a terrific performer. We'll see. She claims to have retired, but I'll really believe it if in a few years we don't see her back again. But to see John Ellison Conley, Rebecca Naomi Jones, Casey Levy, and Will Swenson in the show certainly is a good lineup for any musical. So this is a good evening in the theater.
All right, Michael, what did you think?
Yeah, I also did not see the surprise ending coming, but I mean, I never do. I'm the best audience for those kind of shows. So I'm with you, Peter. I enjoyed it very, very much. I thought it was one of the sexiest shows I've ever seen. Just the staging and the choreography and the cast. Will Swenson and Casey Levy, they really work up a lot of heat, I would say, a lot of heat during the show. I enjoyed the music greatly. I thought it was perfect for the show and the lyrics too, for that matter. There were some times, I mean, obviously it depends on where you sit and how high you sit. My seat was not on the stage. We should probably say the theater has been reconfigured so that it's completely in the round. Peter, do you know when that happened exactly?
No.
Yeah,
no.
I'm not sure either. I haven't been to the Union Square in several years. The last
last
time I was there was still a proscenium theater.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm.
But I know that something before this show, I think something called Traces was there. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah. So I don't know if – well, anyway, I'm not sure when they reconfigured it, but they did. And so my seat was not on the stage in the center. Many people are seated on stage at tables as if they were in this bar where a lot of the action takes place. But I was there are still some regular theater seats around that. But my seat was not raised very high. So there were times, not too many, but there were times when I couldn't see one or two people, as they were singing. And then, of course, there are many times when they're facing away from you while singing. But I didn't think it was a huge problem. I did think that the environmental setting helped it greatly in terms of the intimacy and the feeling of it. And remember this because it was told to me by Eli Wallach. I'm not sure if all of our listeners realize that the Union Square Theater is on the site of what used to be the infamous Tammany Hall.
Oh.
Which I find fascinating. I mean, it's the same building. It's part of what Tammany Hall used to be. So I always remember that when I go. And that certainly lends a really amazing historical aspect to it. But I thought it was a terrific show. And it's interesting to me how there seems to be this mini craze of environmental theater, I guess you would say. I just saw, and I know Peter did too, Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812, which is in a constructed space down in the Meatpacking District. And in that case, there again, you are seated in a bar restaurant, and the action takes place all around you. And Murder Ballad, same thing. It's quite different, but in the general sense, we have Sleep No More, and then I think there are one or two other shows that I can't think of right at the moment. And I really like that kind of theater when it's done well. I'm with Peter in very much not liking audience participation theater, but that's different from environmental theater, and in the cases of both Murder Ballad and Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet, you're not going to have anyone like accosting you and like making you part of the show. It's just that it happens right around you, and sometimes like within a foot of you, there'll be an actor, singing or speaking. So I really enjoyed both of these shows. Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet is one of the most incredible things I've seen. The score by Dave Malloy, the music and lyrics. This show based on a very small section of War and Peace by Tolstoy. And it comes with a full Russian dinner, so the ticket price is a little hefty for that reason. But if you factor in that you're not paying for dinner separately, it's really not that hefty at all.
When it was on
Ars Nova.
Yeah, right. When it was there, it wasn't quite a full dinner. It was bread and vodka, but now they've upped the meal. You don't have to go there and think that the best part of the evening will be the meal, because the theater event itself is terrific. And I thought it was the best theater music I had heard this entire season.
Oh, wow. I'm so glad to hear you say that. Yeah,
I liked it more than any other score I heard this season. So it fascinated me throughout. And while I haven't gone to see it at this new space, what happened at Ars Nova, where there were about 7 or 8 tiny little stages around the audience. And is that still the case, Michael?
That's basically the case, but it's one of those things where, having seen it at this space, I said to because I know someone in the cast and actually the director was sitting near us, as it turned out. I said, I cannot imagine this at Ars Nova. And they said, well, it had its, both have their pluses and their minuses. It was very, very intimate at Ars Nova, but they didn't, maybe weren't able to kind of communicate the sweep and the scope of the text in the same way. It's just incredible. And the talent of the cast, Natasha is Philippa Sue, whom I've never heard of, but we'll hear from again. And, Lucas Steele who's someone I've worked with briefly in the past, just amazing vocally and dramatically as Anatole. Dave Malloy, who wrote it, the whole thing, also appears as Pierre, and has a very, very moving, very, very moving song at the very end. I really was moved to tears, and I spoke to several other people who said the same thing. I adored it. I thought it was extraordinary. Apparently, they cannot go, they cannot stay there past a certain point, I believe, this winter. They're going to have to move, because the whole thing is going to come down, because a building is going to be built or something like that. So it will be interesting to see where they might go.
That Club Casino, yeah,
yes.
They are talking about the need to get out of there. They're actually on their website where they're talking about tickets and.
Well, someone mentioned
sort of leave it as an open-ended thing, but after this winter, we don't know where we're going to be, but we'll be somewhere.
Someone mentioned it. It seems like it would be absolutely ideal for Circle in the Square, which as we know, is just sitting there empty. Wouldn't that be a perfect match?
Yes,
between show and theater,
Sure.
Mm. Well, it's. Could they do the food in there? I'm sure they could figure something out.
I was thinking about that. That's an interesting question. I mean, it might be more trouble than it's worth, because they'd have to cater it, I assume.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Box lunches.
cold Russian dinner.
We love that. But we sort of transitioned out of Murder Ballad into Natasha.
Yes, we did.
Comment. Did we want? I didn't know if you both had your say on Murder Ballad. If you've got the final points out that you wanted to make about it.
I did.
Yeah, I just thought it was I thought it was a good transition because of the
environmental theater aspect of it. It's very cool, and I'm glad that you brought up the other venues that are also environmental theater that has been popping up more. Is it my imagination, or is environmental theater happening more in the last couple of years than it has in the past? Or just am I not remembering it?
No, it does. It does seem to be. I think I made that point. I call it a mini craze. I guess these things go in cycles. And actually, there's another one that I can't go into detail about because it hasn't officially opened yet. But there's this production of Around the World in 80 Days that is about to open at the beautifully renovated new it's called the New Theater now on 45th Street, the old home of Primary Stages. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I won't get into detail, but they've just painted the walls and the floor of the stage to make it feel like you're right in the middle of the action, even though in that case it's still a traditional proscenium setup. So it definitely seems to be something that that is in the consciousness now of directors and producers. And again, as long as it's done well, I'm all for it.
And while we don't want to talk about the Caucasian Chalk Circle just yet because it hasn't opened, it's funny that a show that Brecht was famous for theater of alienation, and yet there's some audience participation in Caucasian Chalk Circle. So
yes.
Stay tuned next week, and we'll talk about that.
Yes.
So the producers and the the press rep for Around the World, they're doing some interesting marketing, aren't they? They're offering trips and various different virtual things where they have a sort of a contest where they win a trip around the world. But we'll chat about all that stuff
right.
next week. It's very interesting. We don't want to jump the gun there and get them all mad at us.
Nope.
So something that happened last week we briefly chatted about was the Broadway Beauty Pageant. Just Michael, give us a quick update on how it went last Monday night.
Yes, this was the seventh year of the show. It benefits the Ali Fournais Center, which, as we mentioned, is a wonderful, wonderful organization that provides shelter for lesbian, gay, trans, bisexual, all those letters, youth who many of whom have been thrown out by their families for being gay. It's a really very, very valuable, wonderful organization. And the Broadway Beauty Pageant, I think, is really starting to become more and more well-known. They moved, they changed venues this year from Symphony Space, which was a great place for them. But now they're this year they were in the much larger Skirball Center at NYU. And they had a terrific panel of judges, Andrea Martin, Billy Porter, and Michael Urey. They're called judges, but they're not actually judges because they don't make the decision. The decision is entirely in the audience's hands. And the five contestants were Callan Bergman from Silence the Musical, which actually was the first off-Broadway contestant they've had, Orion Griffiths from Pippin, Julius C. Carter from Spider-Man, Matthew Goodrich, who is actually the understudy for Johnny Orsini in The Nance, Paul Hissang Miller from Mamma Mia, and Yurel Echezarreta from Matilda. And yes, thank you. And Orion Griffiths won, which is probably not a surprise to anyone who's seen Pippin, because aside from his amazing talents as an acrobat, he's got one of the most perfect physiques that God or a gym ever gave to any human being. So he won. He actually did a lot of his he recreated a lot of his acrobatic stuff from Pippin as his talent. And it was just it's a really great show. If you haven't caught it in the past, make sure it's on your radar for next year, because it's really a lot of fun. And Tova Feltscher did a great job again in hosting. She's hosted six of the 7 years, and she's just really great.
All right. And Peter, you went out of town last week up to, was it Rochester?
Rochester, New York, indeed. Because the Stars of Tomorrow were being chosen. And this is part of the Jimmy Awards, which will be given out at the Minskoff Theater on July 1st for high schoolers. And it's so wonderful that high schoolers compete in a competition that is held in a Broadway theater, as opposed to some arbitrary little hall, that these kids from around the country who have been rigorously trained and rigorously rehearsed to ply their wares. And what they do is they appear in high school musicals during the year. A series of judges go out and see these high school musicals. 25 are chosen as the best. They then come to the Rochester Auditorium Theater. That's what it's called. Auditorium Theater is redundant as that sounds, where Katharine Hepburn once did Coco. And they sing 90 seconds of a song that they did in their musicals. So you might hear a Maria sing 90 seconds of The Sound of Music. You might hear a young man sing 90 seconds of This is the Moment from Jekyll and Hyde, so on and so forth. So I was one of the judges. John Bolton, whom you know from Christmas Story this past season, who comes from Rochester. That's where from where he hails. And Brett Smock, who runs the Merry-Go-Round Playhouse not far away. We were the three judges, and it was a terribly difficult decision-making process because, all right, first we got the 25 kids down to 12 and then to 6. And believe me, picking one boy and one girl, which we're asked to do, is a very difficult procedure when the kids were so talented. Any one of those 6 could have been the representative, and we had to struggle long and hard with the eventual winners. But indeed, we were able to come to a conclusion, and you will see one very talented boy and one very talented girl from Rochester if you attend the Jimmy Awards at the Minskoff Theater on July 1st, which I hope you do. I mean, it's very, very moving to see how much talent there is out there. I mean, I went to the Minskoff last year as well and was tremendously impressed. So this is the type of thing in which Laura Benanti started. by all means, look for the Laura Benanti of tomorrow on July 1st.
I'm so glad they did that TV documentary that three parts?
Three parts, yeah.
Because I think it really deserves as much publicity as it can get. It's such a terrific, terrific thing.
You bet.
So there's a link in the show notes to the National High School Music Theater Awards website, and there's a place to buy tickets and more information about it. And I think you can actually see the documentary there as well.
Yeah, it really, if you're a teen or if you're a parent, by all means, get involved. You know, at the end of the evening, they asked us each to speak to the kids, and John certainly did, and Brett certainly did. And I didn't. I said, okay, all you kids know you're terrific, but I want to talk to the people behind me, the parents, because I want you all to get down on your knees and thank God that your kids are in such a healthy activity. How many parents out there with kids on street corners wish that their kids could be involved in an activity like this? So you're lucky people, and I want you to know it. And I believe that in the core of my soul. So as a result, if there are any parents listening out here with talented kids, get them in this program so that they can really benefit and apply their craft, because I really do believe it's an important building block and stepping stone to greater success.
Peter,
wonderful thing to say.
Is this... Is this because it's the National High School Music Theater Awards? Is this kids of only high school age, or does your high school have to sponsor a program into it? Can kids just audition for this program without having the high school affiliation?
I believe, and I could be wrong about this, but it is my impression that yes, your high school has to sign up for this, and so the judges can come out and see your shows.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Hmm.
But more and more are joining. I think they made that point last year. I think they said something about that from the stage.
You know, our local school budgets, the voting on the school budgets were just this past week. And so many school budgets are getting cut left and right. And the first thing to go, of course, is the arts and the theater programs.
Well, the football helmets need new decals.
That's right.
First things first.
I don't know if you, James, have you seen Pippin?
I haven't seen Pippin yet. I'm going to go next week.
One of the biggest laughs in it, although it's kind of sad when you think about it, is a line that was changed. Pippin is trying various things like in order to like find himself. And at one point he tries the arts, and then he says he discovered that when I can't know, I'm not going to be able to get the exact line now, but when the government cuts funding, the arts are the first to go. Mm-hmm. And yeah, people laugh, you know, but it's sad because it's true.
It is.
So
yeah, it's something that unfortunately we've had to bring up a few times in the last couple of years here.
They just don't. Yeah. So, and we have all the answers to making happier kids, you know, so it's stupid.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, not to get into it, but I suppose that there are, I mean, there are obviously things that can happen in high school theater too. But as we have seen, the sports world, you know, that it can be very prone to some very bad things happening. So it's just, I think it's worth people who make the decisions looking at it a little more closely and seeing how healthy it can be for people to be involved in the arts.
When I went back to school for my master's, I did a whole research and study on the funding of the arts versus the funding of sports. And the thesis of the paper was, I think that sports are really great and wonderful, mm-hmm. and all I would like to do is have the arts funded dollar for dollar the same as sports.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think that there's a place for there's a place for everybody in these things, because there's a lot of folks who are sports oriented that would never be interested in some of the things in the arts, or they think that they would never be interested.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people in theater that say that they're not really sports fans, but if given an exposure to sports and an mm-hmm. evenness, I think that everybody would find their own place. And ironic, we mentioned Pippin, where people will find their place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, it's a very complex issue, especially when it surrounds people and taxes and a tough economy and things like that. The schools are taking the easy route in cutting arts when they refuse to cut the sports programs as well, equally. So let's move on. I got a chance to see Macbeth at the Barrymore this week. They invited us again to come see it, and I just wanted to chat about it just for a minute with you guys, because I was very I was very confused about why they did this production.
Oh, I didn't like it at all.
And, you know, I think that, you know, every time a Broadway show gets mounted, there should be a purpose. And the purpose isn't to make money. It's a purpose to do something, to break new ground. And if, unless you are in my opinion, unless you were a big scholar of Macbeth.
I agree.
Or if you were a big, huge fan of Alan Cumming, there was absolutely no reason to put this production on Broadway.
Well, you know, as I think I said, several people have called it a vanity production, and I don't think that's unfair in this case, because, as you said, I mean, you know, if you really like him, you know, I guess you're going to want to see him do it, and he does a very good job for what it is. But as I also said, I know Macbeth very, very well, because I was in a production, and I've seen about 20, and it is one of Shakespeare's shortest plays, if not the shortest. But still, there were many times when it was very hard to follow the story, just because he's ping-ponging back and forth from one character to the next. And, you know, I don't think that's right to sabotage that part of the storytelling just for whatever you might gain by having one person play all the parts.
It was very confusing if you didn't know it. Know Macbeth very well, if you weren't a scholar of it, or having done it, or seen a number of productions. So,
I don't think Shakespeare reduces well. Shakespeare's big.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen a lot of productions where there's been a ton of doubling, like, you know, 4 people, 5 people, 6 people, doing the entire play. I don't like it. Given the fact you're not paying royalties, you know, spend the money on actors. So I'll always feel that way. I know, no matter who, and certainly Alan Cumming is a great performer. You don't need me to tell you that, but nevertheless, even he couldn't pull this off.
Well, yeah, and the more characters there are, that's the paradox. The more characters there are, the more need to have them each played by someone different so as not to confuse you.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sorry that this was I feel like a missed opportunity, but perhaps we're going to see Alan back on stage in a revival of the Cabaret revival that he did before, as was rumored before. So another thing that I don't know, I guess we can't really call it a revival as much as a transfer. Michael got a chance to see Peter and the Starcatcher, which moved to New World Stages off Broadway from Broadway. And Michael, tell us about that.
I'd be delighted to. This is one of those, more common occurrences where something started off Broadway. In this case, it was at the New York Theater Workshop, and then moved to Broadway, and now has moved back off Broadway to New World Stages. Now, in this case, I would say the production has remained almost completely unchanged because both of those off-Broadway venues have Broadway-sized stages, pretty much. So don't feel like you're going to get anything less if you see this off-Broadway, because you are not. You're going to get, as certainly in terms of the size and the production values, you're going to get exactly what you got on Broadway. And I'm very happy to say that the show is in amazing shape. And the cast is superb. Almost everyone is new. Kevin Del Aguila is still in it, playing Smee, who also some of us may know as one of the co-authors of Altar Boys. And Rick Holmes, who's playing Black Stash, I believe, took over the role on Broadway at some point. And he was absolutely fantastic. This was Christian Borle, in an incredibly acclaimed performance. And it's very, very hard shoes to fill, but he was delightful. He was just so, so charming and funny. I had the same feeling about the show that I had the first two times I saw it. And actually, the friend whom I brought, who was seeing it for the first time, also had the same feeling. It really takes quite a while to get going because there's a lot of exposition in Act One, and there's a lot happening as the various plot points and elements of the characters are set in place. But if you do go see it and you feel maybe that at the end of Act One that you're not thrilled, please don't even consider leaving, because Act Two is just really one of the most entertaining things I've ever seen ever. I should also mention just before leaving this, that Boy is now played by Jason Ralph in a very, very winning, wonderful performance. And Molly is Nicole Lawrence, who is, a very worthy successor to Celia Keenan Bolger. I'm happy. I hope that it does very well off Broadway. I hope it can just have a perpetual life, because it's really one of my favorite shows of the past several years.
So Starcatcher is still a great thing to see, and that's exciting at I didn't check this out, so maybe you could tell me, although they moved back to off-Broadway, are they still Broadway prices, or are they back at off-Broadway prices?
Oh, well, I don't actually know. I assume it's got to be somewhat less than Broadway.
Let me look here.
That's an interesting question, James.
Let's see. There's a $1.50 facility fee. I know that.
Yes.
Oh, $72.50 to $99. So sort of in between... Yeah. Off-Broadway and Broadway prices. They still are holding on to a little bit of the high end of off-Broadway and the low end of Broadway with a discount. But still, worth it. And that New World Stages, if it's like the multiplex of theaters. If in fact you go see Peter and the Starcatcher and you don't like it, move down to theater and see if you can second act something.
As I think we've mentioned, it seemed like that complex was in huge trouble for a while there, and that it might actually maybe close. At least that was my interpretation. But they certainly seem to be doing very, very well now, and I'm very happy about that too.
Well, you know, in news this week, we had the Ambassador Theater Group bought the Foxwood Theater.
Yes.
We don't talk very much because, major properties don't really change hands all that often on Broadway. But Foxwoods was owned by Live Nation Entertainment, which was a merger of Live Nation, which is the basically a concert promotion organization, and Ticketmaster. And Ambassador Theatre Group, which is a British-based organization, has made a foray into it and bought the theater that is housing currently Spider-Man, which is interesting. They bill Spider-Man as the most talked-about show on Broadway.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's accurate and fair. And O&M nailed that one.
And ironically, even if they wanted to, presumably they cannot rename the theater the Ambassador because there already is one.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. So I don't know what this is.
I asked. I said, well, obviously there's going to be a new name change. And the press agent said, we don't know what it's going to be yet, if it's going to happen at all. But I suspect we'll have a new name. And wow, has that theater had an identity crisis, because this will be the fourth name that it has had in since it opened in 1998. So I don't think there's any Broadway theater, certainly no current Broadway theater, that has had four names in 15 years. I wonder if anyone ever has, for that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I may do some research on. We'll see what the new name is, but I suspect there will be a new name. A lot of people come down harder than that theater for being too big, and it is big, no question about it. However, Spider-Man has proved that it's a good place for this type of show. See, I think Young Frankenstein made a terrible mistake going in there, because it is too big for a musical comedy of conventional proportions. But for an arena-type show, in which Spider-Man is and always will be. I mean, we hear rumors of a King Kong musical. So that might be the next tenant, and that's fine, too. So I think there's a place for an enormous barn if you have an enormous barn type of show.
Right. Now, Peter, you may know the background, because I didn't realize James mentioned. So the Ambassador Theatre Group is a British organization, you said?
Yes, it's the UK's largest theater owner.
So is there or has there been an Ambassador Theater in London?
I don't recall if there's one.
Because I was wondering if the American one was named after the London
one.
Yeah,
I mean, really, because Ambassador does sound like a British term. Yeah, I mean, God knows we have ambassadors all over the world. But there's something very British sounding about the word ambassador. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But I can't recall an Ambassador Theater that in London. I may have missed that in my travels. But.
So, yeah, they might be having a problem coming up with a fourth name for this theater. I propose the Felicia.
Yeah, good idea. So,
all right, moving on to our next topic. Peter got to see the opening salvo in the Gay Fest plays. So, Peter, tell us about what you saw.
Yeah, this is the fifth year for Gay Fest, which is produced by two terrific guys, Bruce Robert Harris and Jack W. Batman. They've done it, and they've made it happen, and God love them. This year they're going to be three plays that will be done one after the other. I went to the first one, which is called Moonlight and Love Songs, that's a phrase from a favorite song of mine, As Time Goes By. So I was also interested to see if there was any Casablanca type of reference in the show. Yes, there is, but because the two guys who meet in this play are very interested in movies, even old movies, which is interesting because one of the characters, Jim, is a young college student. And I'm sorry to say that we've all heard this, that so many college kids today do not want to see black and white movies. They're just not interested. it's got to be in color or else. So here's Harry Wallace, an architect who's a man who's pushing 50 and meeting this young man and not wanting to get involved with him because, after all, he's too young, you know, or is he? I mean, you know, they seem to get along so well, but I mean, this is a big issue when how do you deal with friends and relatives when they see you're dating a very young man? The play takes a twist that I didn't see coming, and it brings up an entirely new issue about young and old relationships, and I think it's handled very, very well. Gerald McCullough and Nick Bailey are very, very good as the couple. Stephen Petrillo's direction is terrific in creating a wonderful mood, and the acting throughout is wonderful. So as a result, I would say that this is a very good start to Gay Fest this year, which will continue with two other plays, a revival of Gross Indecency, The Three Trials of Oscar Wilde, a play that came out of nowhere 15-odd years ago, which started as a showcase, but thanks to his diligent press agent, Kevin McInerney, he got everybody in there to make sure that they saw it and really launched the career of Moises Kaufman, who did write and direct it. Moises has had a terrific career, and he owes a good deal of that to Kevin McInerney, the press agent, for making it happen. So we're going to get a revival of that, and then we're also going to get another new play that is going to deal with one of our most esteemed presidents, and it's called The Loves of Mr. Lincoln. Well, given this is Gay Fest, I think we're going to have a play that's going to deal with some rumors that have surfaced in recent years. So that sounds like something that's worth seeing. That's a new play by David Brendan Hopes. And Sidney Burgoyne, who's a terrific director, is going to be staging it. So I do think that everybody should get to the Abington Theater Complex at 312 West 36. It's not a complex with theaters with a lot of seats, so I would urge people to get there sooner rather than later. And what's really nice is that all proceeds from Gay Fest benefit the Harvey Milk High School, and that's a terrific organization, and I'm really glad that both Bruce Robert Harris and Jack Batman are really interested in helping that organization. So it's a wonderful experience all around.
All right.
Yeah, it sounds like a really wonderful season, Peter, just reading about it from the press release.
So I have linked to Gay Fest on the show page so that you can quickly get to it and find out about how to get tickets and the rest of the shows that are going to be part of it. Coming up in 2 days, is on the May 28th, is the release of Peter's book, and on May 29th, there is a little event at the Drama Bookshop, isn't there, Peter?
Yeah, 5 o'clock. Gee, I would love to meet people who have been corresponding with me for years, if not decades, through first letters, when we used to do letters, and now emails, and people who have certainly written me about these podcasts. So I think it'd be terrific to shake hands with you at this event on Wednesday night at 5, and Ken Bloom, the co-author of Broadway Musicals, the 101 Greatest Shows of All Time, will be there, and we'll discuss shows that did not win the Tony Awards, some that should have, some that shouldn't have, some that could have, if it weren't for certain circumstances, bad luck, what have you. So that's what we'll be discussing at 5 o'clock at the Drama Bookshop on West 40th Street.
Wait, I'm sorry, what's the date again?
This Wednesday, the 29th.
Okay.
The next time we have a Wednesday.
And don't you have another event on the 10th?
Yeah, that's at the Friars Club. That's another event. Yeah. So things are happening with this book. So I'm very pleased to say.
That's great. Let's see. What do you guys have on your agenda coming up for the next 7 days? Michael, what do you have going on?
Well, I'm going to be in Provincetown next weekend, but tomorrow, I'm really excited. I'm actually interviewing Victor Garber at lunch for a Sweeney Todd project that I'm working on. So I'm really, really excited about that. I imagine he'll be really, really interesting to talk to, not only about Sweeney Todd, but, you know, really kind of an amazing career.
You bet. Yeah. I'm seeing Far From Heaven this week. A musical that certainly has a lot of interest in it because it's written by the guys who wrote The Marvelous Grey Gardens. But I have to admit, I'm spending most of the week preparing for the Theatre World Awards, which will be on June 3rd, on Monday at 6:45 at the Music Box. So I'll be emceeing that, and we should have a number of nice people that both presenting and receiving these awards. So that's going to take a lot of my time this week.
Well, it certainly sounds like you both have your plates very full.
And we should mention, I believe that Shakespeare in the Park, has it not started? I think it has.
Has it? Are they giving out blankets?
Ain't that the truth?
Oh, well.
I didn't even think about, my goodness, sitting out there in the park at night.
I didn't actually think about that either, but I may have mentioned a couple of years ago, at the tail end of the summer, I mean, it really, really was early fall, there was some production company that came in and did a production of Peer Gynt at the Delacorte. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking like, I think it was like early October. it was so cold. But it was amazing to see it. I guess
sports teams, you know, they yeah, and fans, you know, they're sitting out there in October, November.
No, in the snow in Green Bay in Wisconsin.
Sure.
You know?
In fact, the Super Bowl is going to be played here this year, isn't it? This season, I believe it is in January. So we'll see what happens that winter weekend, if indeed it snows tremendously or is bitterly cold. You know, it was funny. I was just reminiscing about attending the opening night of Sweet Charity on January 29th, 1966. And there's an allusion in Sweet Charity. Many younger readers and listeners may not know this, but at one point in Charity's soliloquy, she talks about her boyfriend who wants to go to Florida. Come on down, she says.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, at that time, there was an airline named Eastern, long since gone, that used to have commercials on TV, endless commercials, where they showed people by swimming pools in Miami having the best time sipping pina coladas and, you know, getting tans. And the pitchman for Eastern Airlines would say, come on down. You know, don't be in the cold weather. You know, and I'm telling you, that night, the Sweet Charity opened. It had to be like 2 degrees out. I mean, it was amazing. And that line got a laugh of recognition because everybody had seen those ubiquitous ads. But more to the point, that night, it really did seem like a good idea to go down to Florida. Except Sweet Charity was such a good show, you really were very happy where you were sitting.
Well, I have to add that, you know, my Justin is 9, and he had a soccer tournament yesterday in this torrential pouring rain and driving stuff, and that was in the morning. And in the afternoon, he had a baseball game, and of course, the baseball game was canceled because they're sane, you know. And the soccer people just get out there and do that all day. But yeah.
Well, on a positive note, this entire weekend, holiday weekend in New York City was supposed to be kind of a washout, but it's a beautiful day today on Sunday, and I think it's only supposed to get better during the week.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
So those people in the park, you know, they should be fine.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. So I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to these podcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com. There's a subscribe button. That way, each and every time we have a new episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded for you and you won't miss anything. You can also listen to us on the Stitcher app, which is an application for your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Android device, and it streams This Week on Broadway directly to your device so that you won't miss anything. We also get played on Broadway World Radio. Broadway World plays us Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m. And if you go to BroadwayRadio.com, there's contact information for Peter, Michael, and me. So if you want to reach us, phone, Twitter, Facebook, email, all sorts of ways to get in touch with us would be great. Plus, it'll have links to some of the things that we've talked about today. So on behalf of Peter Felicia and Michael Portantiere, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. I want to hold you tight or die. Want to watch you swoon. Things about you are